This is Studio 395, a production of the Department of History at James Madison University in its Historical Research Methods course, History 395. Hi, I'm Kathleen Brett, a sophomore history and political science double major. Today we're going to talk about eugenics, right, Grace?
Yep, the American eugenics movement.
I'm so excited to hear about this. So I'm speaking today with Grace Gordon, who's a sophomore history major at James Madison University and the author of the paper, America's Hidden History, The Eugenics Buildup to Buck V. Bell. Hey, Grace.
Hey, Kathleen. Happy to talk with you today.
Thanks so much for talking to me.
It's history time with Grace and Kathy. Gonna talk about the past, let's make it snappy. It's a podcast that'll sure make your ears happy. It's Studio 395.
So Better Babies, Grace. What is that? It's crazy.
Okay, so Better Babies, they had Better Babies and Fitter Family contests at state fairs, like, all across America, to promote eugenic ideas, sort of part of, like, during the Progressive Era, which is from, like, the 1890s to the 1920s. Eugenics is really able to thrive.
They had this with, like, pig judging and pie judging Better Babies.
And then also babies.
And families,
too. Same kind of thing. Yeah, just rating them, like, who has the best hereditary genes.
So what determined this, like? Like, was there a scale put out by the government, or was it just people's opinions?
Mm-hmm. So, it's kind of hard to say, like, who it's targeted in general by eugenics, because it's not really a specific group of people. It's, like, it's based on, like, race, class, gender. The people that are targeted are, like, epileptics, drunkards, criminals.
People that are feeble-minded.
Yeah, feeble-minded is, like, a whole blanket term itself for anyone that could be considered, like, mentally handicapped, like, sexually promiscuous, a criminal, something like that, where they just think it's a person that can't make right or wrong decisions if they're not capable of that.
Yeah, so something our listeners wouldn't know if they hadn't read your paper is feeble-mindedness appears to change, kind of, the definition. Is there a reason behind this? Does immigration play into it during the 1920s? Or I think you mentioned the Immigration Act of 1924. Right. Playing into that.
Right. So feeble-minded, that whole definition and what it is considered to be is developed a lot by eugenicist Henry Goddard. And he did a study on the Kallikak family, which became very popular within America. It even was featured in, like, high school textbooks as, like, an important event that happened that year. And pretty much what the Kallikak study was, it studied a family, actually a fictitious family called the Kallikak. Well, they're a real family, but that's a fake name.
Okay.
The Kallikaks. And they're just a hybrid, educated family, and they have a successful line. Their pedigree is very successful, and in the eyes of the eugenicists, they have, like, a good, upstanding pedigree that fits in the best stock of people. I'm using air quotes around best stock.
Okay.
So they use pedigrees to try and determine, like, people's hereditary traits that would pass down. Like, they see all, maybe success is a hereditary trait because we see successful, wealthy, educated people and their children, too, follow in those same footsteps. So that's pretty much what the Kallikak study was studying, was this family. And then one of the Kallikaks had a child with a poor woman. I think she worked at, like, a bar or something. And her child also turned out, they considered that woman to be feeble-minded. She was just a non-educated white woman. And her child, they thought, oh, her child is feeble-minded as well, just like her, even though her father is this high-bred best stock of people. And so there's some thinking, well, these feeble-minded people, if they mix with the best stock of people, then they're going to ruin the hereditary pedigree that they have and taint it.
Yeah.
And so there's this fear of being feeble-minded and having the feeble-minded spread across America. And so eugenicists are trying to stop that spread and protect the, quote, best stock of people. And so the Immigration Act of 1924, like you said, was enacted. And eugenicist Harry Laughlin, he had a big part to play in that. He advocated for it very strongly because he believed that Eastern and Southern Europeans were inferior to, like, Anglo-Saxons. Madison Grant was a very influential character at this time, and he's arguing for the superiority of Nordic people. So, A lot of eugenicists believe that as well, that the Nordics are the most superior, best stock of people, and the unfit people are everybody else, like Western and Southern Europeans. And so the Emigration Act of 1924 banned a lot of Eastern and Southern Europeans from entering into America so they could kind of keep the whole mentally degenerate population under control as much as
they
could.
As they viewed it at the time, mentally degenerate.
That's what, they view as mentally, obviously we don't.
Yes. So you mentioned that there are a lot of supporters of eugenics in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Were there any people that were, like, actively fighting against it? Because I know in the case you go on to talk about, Buck v. Bell, mm-hmm. there's, even Carrie Buck's lawyer was pro-eugenics.
Yeah. So like, it was insane seeing the impact that eugenics had, because I had no idea the scope of it mm-hmm. when I started this, how impactful it was on America and American mindsets, and eventually
it started in the rest of the world.
It started in England. Francis Galton coined the term eugenics in only like the 1880s, and it's so surprising
in the 20s.
Yeah, that by 1927, the Supreme Court said yes, like if you need to sterilize someone and your state has that law, do it, because that is going to be for the good of society and for the good of that person. That is what is best. But what did you ask?
If
there's any people against it. The main party that I saw that openly fought against the ideals of the eugenics was the Catholic Church, because they're fighting they always believe in the dignity of every human person, and, like, they have that whole argument. And so, but besides that, there wasn't any, like, huge opposition that I noticed. I also didn't look into that a ton, but, like, popular, well-accepted idea at this time. Like I said, during the Progressive Era, eugenics, the whole ideals of the progressives really allowed eugenics to thrive, because, you know, science is looked to in this time as something that can solve all of our problems if we just apply it to a real life. Yeah. They've just heard about evolution, and applying evolution to humans is pretty much what eugenics is doing. Since, I don't know if I talked about it, Galton is the second cousin to Darwin, and
would you say that there's an overlap between the progressive movement and the eugenics movement?
Oh yeah, for sure. Like I'm saying, Galton is pretty much just applying Darwin's ideas of natural selection and survival of the fittest to humans, and he's saying natural selection hasn't worked on humans the way it's worked in animals, because humans have developed things like charity and welfare, which mm-hmm. are propping up the weaker individuals of society who would naturally died off if we lived like animals live. And so, that's basically the premise of eugenics. And the progressive era in America especially is pushing for looking towards science as the answer and progressing science as far as we can to try mm-hmm. and better the world with it. Because they just,
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So within your paper, you tended to focus on the impact Virginia had within the eugenics movement, and specifically Buck v. Bell. Care to comment on that whole aspect?
Yeah. So I thought it was really interesting that Virginia was the state that sterilized the most people, second only to California, in all of America.
Wow.
In America, we think that at least 60,000 people were sterilized. But it had me thinking a lot about that 60,000 number. I also saw 70,000 in some other sources.
So we know the number was high.
We know the number was high. It's not as high. Like, in Nazi Germany, you see the number rise to, like, at least 400,000. And this is after America starts sterilizing. When Germany begins sterilizing people, an American eugenicist was quoting saying, the Germans are beating us at our own game.
Oh, wow.
So Americans saw eugenics, you know, as, like, their thing. It came from England, but mm-hmm. they are really implementing it into society and taking it in harsh steps forward, sterilizing people, creating like marriage laws that prohibit types of people from marrying, and prohibiting people from entering the country, and just taking these drastic steps. And so eventually, you know, Nazi Germany is going to start sterilizing, and then they're going to take it even further. And then after that, I think is when America started to dissociate itself.
Because we don't want to be associated with
Nazis. Yeah, we don't want to be associated with eugenics, so I just think that's a big reason why we don't talk about it today, is because we don't want...
It is the hidden history, as you titled it, so mm-hmm. that makes sense. So tell me more about Buck v. Bell. Mm-hmm. What happened? Walk me through the case.
Okay, so Carrie Buck, her mother, Doris Buck, was admitted to the Virginia Colony for Epileptics and Feeble-Minded. Epilepsy was another hereditary trait that they deemed as something that should not be carried on, so they should sterilize people with epilepsy, which was interesting because Harry Laughlin, who was one of the main supporters of the Immigration Act of 1924, had epilepsy himself. So I thought, yeah. And I was like, oh, so did he sterilize himself because he believed that, you know?
Whoa.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah.
And so I looked into it because I thought, like, that would be something that he would want to openly advertise. It's like, look what I did. I sterilized myself for the good of not only myself, but also society. And I know that this is a trait that we shouldn't carry on. Like,
but he
believed.
Didn't.
But I never found any evidence that he sterilized
himself.
Did he
have kids?
He, however, did not have any kids.
Okay.
And he married young and was married till he died.
Okay.
And so I think there's a chance maybe he did. I don't know why he wouldn't advertise it, because I feel like that would
further the cause.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, but anyway, I was talking about
Buck.
So Buck grew up with a foster family, the Dobbs, and she had a relatively normal childhood, never failed out of school or anything. The Dobbs never, like, reported her being abnormal or needing extra help, or, like, they wanted her to be sent to the colony, too, or anything like that.
Until.
It wasn't until she was 17 and was raped by the Dobbs' nephew and fell pregnant as a result of that, that they suddenly turned to the colony, you know, an unwanted pregnant woman, and they say, we can't take care of her, she's always been feeble-minded, and, like, we just have had enough, and, like, she needs to be sent to the colony like her mother, she's just like her. And so they sent her there.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, the Virginia sterilization law had just been passed. And Albert Priddy, the head of the Virginia colony, is like, oh, I think this is the perfect case for us to test the Virginia sterilization law on Buck. Let's try to do it because her mother's feeble-minded, Buck's feeble-minded. We can see it's passed on from one generation to another. Let's try to sterilize her. And so they also tested Carrie's daughter, Vivian, and as a baby, they observed her and said, oh, she doesn't seem normal. I don't think she's
acting. Seems a little biased.
Even though it turned out Vivian actually got on the honors roll one year at school. She's like, they had nothing to base that off of.
Yeah. Just, they didn't have a scale.
They
or
just
anything.
Wanted to say it, you know? And so.
It was almost unanimous.
Yeah. It went all the way to the Supreme Court. Supreme Justice Oliver Wendell's made the famous quote, 3 generations are enough. That Carrie should be sterilized, that it would be for the betterment of her and for the betterment of society if she was. And she was for being feeble-minded. And she really didn't know the full extent of what was going on. She didn't know she was actually going to be sterilized. And she did get married later on.
Really?
Had the normal life.
Did she try to have kids? Or?
Well, she...
But
her sister actually tried to have kids. Her sister's a really interesting story I did get to talk about in my paper. Her sister, she never really had a relationship with her because her whole family, they didn't really grow up together. Her mother was in the colony. Her sister was also, I believe, in another foster family. And at the age of, like, 12 or something, she was accused of being sexually promiscuous somehow, sent to the colony.
Yeah.
And at, like, the age of 16, they told her they were giving her, like, an operation, like appendicitis or something random, and they actually sterilized her and didn't tell her.
That's terrible.
Because they believed her to be feeble-minded, a sexually promiscuous woman.
Wow.
And so she never knew that she was sterilized. And she later on got married, tried to have kids, went to the doctor, and they were like, "What? Is there anything wrong?" And the doctor tells her, "You've been sterilized." She had no idea.
Oh my gosh.
And so, like, I just wonder how many people just had no idea they were sterilized.
Yeah, that's something interesting to look into.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's just crazy, the scope of it all.
Yeah, it's why do you think it's America's hidden history? Like, if you had to boil that down to one point, why would you say?
Well, I mean, I don't think we want to admit, like, just looking back on it now, we're like, well, this is just so terrible. Like, all these ideas were so accepted at the time because everyone just thought this is science. And science is, we can use science to make America better, to make society better, to fix our problems. You know, they saw just, like, social problems, like the state of being poor or criminals. Like, oh, those are just people.
It's their own fault.
It's their nature. Like,
based on,
they can't change it. Like, you know, and it's just.
What else can be done other than that?
Yeah, and so, like.
It's a shameful history that we don't want to talk
about. Galton, besides coining the term eugenics, He also coined the term nature versus nurture, which is ironic because eugenics doesn't seem to take into account
either
like nurture at all. Yeah. It's just all nature. You're born this way. You can't change this way. And if you're not the best stock of people, then we should just get rid of you. It's just interesting.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, thanks for talking with me, Grace.
Yeah,
I really appreciate
it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to Studio 395. More interviews on a wide range of historical topics and subscriptions to our podcast are available on our show page at sites.lib.jmu.edu/studio395. To learn more about the history major at James Madison University, please visit www.jmu.edu/history. Thank you.